Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, and welcome to Forever 35, a podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. I'm Dori Shafrir.
And I'm Kate Spencer.
And we're not experts.
But we are two friends who like to talk a lot about serums. Hello.
And I believe we're going to be talking about a serum today.
I mean, it's technically a serum hybrid, Dori.
Oh, I can't wait to talk about it. And when we talk about it, we will be sure to link to it on our website, as we do with all the products we mention. And also, please do check out our other podcast, Here For You, which is daily, as long as the pandemic is going on. And our other podcast that we produce, Gee Thanks Just Bought It. And we do have a voicemail, which is 781-591-0390. You can leave us messages there. And our email is forever35podcast@gmail.com.
Look at you, just knocking it all out. I like it.
Yeah.
Get that business out of the way.
So get it out.
I may do my beauty haul.
Kate, I'm excited.
Oh, what have I done? What have I done? I went on the Glossier website. Mm-hmm. Look, this is definitely a pandemic panic purchase. Have you had one of those yet?
Well, I mean, I did buy all those candles.
Oh, that's right. Like I
mentioned that on Here For You. I don't think I mentioned that on Forever 35.
That's right. Yes. You had a little bit of a candle purchase.
I did.
You know, again, I'm trying not to spend money. And then I have found that when I am very stressed on occasion, I will soothe by shopping. I know I'm not the only one who does this, right?
No, not at all.
Dori, late at night, sometimes I tend to scroll the internet looking for things I want to buy. And then on occasion, I buy them.
Okay, great.
And it is a way of managing stress. I know.
Yeah.
It's not a great way of doing it, but it is a thing I've done. So I'm just going to be honest about that. And here we are. I'm holding 5 new makeup products in my hand.
Okay, what are they?
Okay, so I did ask you if I may do a Glossier haul as if I were a 2015 beauty vlogger. And so here we go. Okay, so I just want to say that I'm always very sucked into Glossier's website. There are a few there are a few items that Glossier sells that are repeat purchases for me. For example, I wear their perfume on a regular basis, and I use Boy Brow, which I love.
Mm-hmm.
Those are probably my top two Glossier products. So I had to re-up, and then I was like, well, why don't I just dip a toe into some other areas? So the first thing I bought is their new Future Dew Oil Serum Hybrid.
Okay.
I'm still not sure I understand this product. It's $24. Okay. It's what you're supposed to use as the last step of your skincare routine. So for me, I would assume that means after my sunscreen. I don't know.
Oh, interesting.
Little confused about that. And it kind of gives you like a very dewy glow. It is what it says it is. I was reading about it, and I read that the intention of this product was to bottle, quote, Glossier skin, which is like very dewy.
Well, you sent me a photo this past weekend. You were intending to just show off your cat eye, but I was like, "Kate, your skin looks amazing." And you said it's future dew.
And you were like, "What's that?" And yeah, I was like, "Welcome to the future." Of dew.
Yeah, I liked it. I was wearing it without any other products on top of it. So I was using it kind of like a BB cream.
And I'm wondering if I might want to like beef it up, if it might kind of work better, quote unquote, with a little bit more coverage. So
I see.
I have been playing with makeup at home because, you know, why not? It's not like if I mess it up, anyone has to see it except my family. So I might play around with that a little bit. But so far, I'm intrigued by this.
Okay.
$24.
Great.
Okay. Next up, I bought a bunch of eye products. I bought two colors. I bought something called Skywash in the color Pebble. Okay. That is matte with a little twist. And it comes in like a nice little brush, like a flat brush. Which I actually use to apply and then use my hand. And it's very, or my fingers, it's very nice, very subtle. And then I'm also using Lidstar, which is like a shiny eye color. And I also liked that. They're very pretty.
Ooh, I'm looking at Skywash right now.
It's cool.
Oh, interesting.
Yes, it's very matte. They're both very light, but I actually paired them together, and that was very pretty. And those are each $18.
And which color did you get?
I got the Skywash. I got in Pebble, and in Lidstar, I got Slip, which is kind of like a rose gold.
Okay.
Not a rose gold. Great. Like a pink shimmer.
A pink gold. Shimmer. What am I talking about? Got it.
Okay. Then I got something called Brow Flick to go with my boy brow. It is like a liquid brow pencil.
Ooh.
To kind of just like give little dots of, you know, like fill in the little spots.
Yeah.
I like it. I don't know if I love it.
Okay.
I'm going to keep playing with it.
Jury's still out.
It's $18. And what I'm thinking is I might prefer a more traditional pencil.
Yeah.
I kind of keep applying this and I'm like, is anything happening? I can't tell. But it's very subtle.
I mean, that was where I kind of landed at the end of the day.
Have you tried Brow Flick?
No. Just that, like, I think I prefer a pencil.
I see. Yeah, I like the like steadiness of the pencil.
Mm-hmm. I also think pencils last longer.
Well, that is my one kind of overall issue with Glossier, is that I'm not sure, these products are so kind of light and sheer that I'm not sure they last very long.
Yeah. I think that also ultimately became my issue with Cloud Paint, which I loved.
Yeah, I like Cloud Paint too.
I felt like it faded after like half a day.
I might need to try all this stuff with some primer. Although I think this Future Dew is maybe supposed to prime a little bit, but like a primer that really like holds the stuff on your face.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this brings me to, though, pro tip. Their $16 eyeliner tool.
Okay.
Now, I have mentioned, I think, on this here podcast before that I would like to learn how to do a cat eye.
Yes.
And I did some sort of eye with this eyeliner. I don't know if it's a cat eye, but I just put a heavy line on with it, and I really liked it. It was really easy to use, and it didn't come on, like, you know how sometimes you use a liquid liner and it's like thick and tons of it, or like all of a sudden your whole eye is just covered in it? And like, I didn't, this was very easy to handle, and it starts very light if you need it to be. So I have to say, I liked this tool.
Yeah.
$16.
Okay. $16.
Now, when I emerged in this face of makeup, like, I ran into my husband first and he was like, "Whoa, why do you have so much makeup on?" I don't know what he thought it was going on. I was just like, it was just fun. Like, this is, I do not wear makeup oft on the regular in my home. So, or with my family. So they were, then I saw my kids and they were like, "Why do you have so much makeup on? What is it?" Like, well, I'm just, I'm just playing around with makeup. It's kind of fun to experiment with. And they were just all like, whoa, you know, they were very confused. But anyway, it is kind of, it's kind of fun to just like fuck around with makeup. And I'm also kind of learned how to really braid my hair well. And I liked, like, it was interesting. It made me feel very made up, the heavy eyeliner and the cat eye. Like, it feels so bold and so visible that.
Right.
But I have friends who feel naked without it. So it's kind of interesting to experiment with, and also experiment with not just learning how to do it, but see how it makes me feel, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Can I was just looking at the product page on Glossier.com for this product. Mm-hmm. May I read one of the reviews?
Oh, yes. I'm dying to hear this.
So the headline is, lasted me through a ... rough night. I never write product reviews, but I have to do one for this. After a night at my boyfriend's holiday party that involved me sweating, laughing, crying, throwing up, etc. I like that throwing up is just part of like...
throwing up, etc.
I woke up to discover my worst nightmare. I was in no state to take off my makeup the night before. When I went to the bathroom to see the beast before me, my pro tip eyeliner was perfectly intact, looking like I had just done it. The one thing I do not regret from that night is putting on this eyeliner. Thank you.
Wow. That is
I mean, that is an endorsement.
Sweating, throwing up, sleeping, laughing. You know, I will, like, I do. Glossy is such an interesting brand to me because the price point is kind of great. It's like more expensive than your typical drugstore buy, but less expensive than your typical like department store buy.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's just an intriguing brand to me. And I do like a lot of their products. I mean, I will say I have purchased like 5 containers of Boy Brow.
Yeah, wait, what shade do you buy? Because I might be able to give you some.
I use the middle shade, so not the black, like the brown.
Yeah, I think I have some I can give you.
Yeah, I'll take it because I buy 2 at a time because rarely does Glossier go on sale.
Exactly. So, that's what I was doing, and then I stopped using it.
So. I will take whatever you have rejected. Anyway, that's what's new with me, Dory. Just makeup in self-isolating.
I'm into it. Very into it.
You did something exciting recently.
I did. I took an online baking class.
Take us on this journey.
So, okay, let me first tell you how I found out about this online baking class. Every month in the Forever 35 Facebook group, there is a post called Forever Hustling, and it's supposed to be where members of the group can be self-promotional. So people post like their Etsy stores and their coaching businesses, and you know, it's just a bunch of things. I love this post. I read it every month. I read every comment. I go to people's Etsy stores. I look on people's Instagrams. I just like love that our listeners do so many cool things. So this, I think it must have been last month, a listener commented and she said, I usually host baking classes at my home in Versailles in France. But since the pandemic, I've been doing online baking classes. And here you can check out my like website, my Instagram. And I was like, hello. What? So I checked out her Instagram. It was beautiful. And she announced that she was going to be doing a new online baking class starting this past Saturday. And it's 2 sessions. There's another one. She does the second session on May 2nd. And it was so cool. She did it. So once you sign up for the class was €25, which was about $27. And she sends you like a recipe and a shopping list in advance. You don't have to buy all the stuff. And most of it was pretty straightforward. It was like flour, sugar, eggs, milk kind of stuff. And you join a private Facebook group just for that class. And then the class is a Facebook Live in the group. So,
wow, that's cool. Yeah,
it was very cool. And she actually like messed up the time. She meant for it to be at 7 p.m. Paris time, but she had calculated the American times wrong. So it ended up being at 8 p.m. Paris time, which is actually really cool because that's when all the Parisians and French people do their clap. Oh, wow. For the healthcare workers. So the class started and she showed us the clap and it was really nice.
Oh my gosh, this is so lovely.
It was so lovely. And she lives in this she's American. She lives in this gorgeous apartment in Versailles with her French partner, Francois, who was filming it. She has a cute little dog named Peanut. It was just super charming. And the first class, we learned how to make cream puffs. So we learned how to make vanilla pastry cream and pâte à choux, which if anyone watches Great British Bake Off, you know that pâte à choux shows up a lot. So it was really cool because I feel like baking, I would characterize myself as a beginner baker. I've never done anything more complicated than a carrot cake. And I feel a lot of times when I'm reading instructions in a baking recipe, they assume this level of familiarity and knowledge that I just don't know. When they say cream butter and sugar together. Okay. But how long am I supposed to cream that for? Is it 30 seconds or is it 5 minutes or, you know what I mean? You just don't.
Oh yeah.
I feel like I just don't know. And the thing with baking is, people are always don't overwork the dough. And I'm I don't know what that, I don't know when dough is overworked. How am I supposed to know? So it was very cool because she went through both of these recipes and you really saw each step and you could ask questions because there's a chat function in Facebook Live. So Francois would see the questions and then he would ask Molly as she was doing them. So I don't even think I said her name. Her name is Molly J. Wilk and her website is mollyjwilk.com and she's on Instagram at Molly J. Wilk. And I just had a great time. And
is this a series of classes that you're doing or was it just a one-off?
It's a two session class. So the first one was this past weekend and then the second one will be in 2 weeks. But she has a live check-in on Wednesday where supposed to now go back and make the things that she taught us to make. I have not yet done it. I was going to do it last night and then I just had too much to do. But maybe I'll do it today. And people have been posting their finished products in the Facebook group because she also showed us that with the pâte à choux, with the leftover pâte à choux, you can make gougères, which are so yummy. And so
what's
people
a gougère?
It's like a cheese puff.
Oh my gosh!
They're delicious. So yeah, it was very cool. I'm going to have to do piping, which I've never done.
Wow.
I know. It was really lovely and she's delightful. So she's going to be doing another session. She said lemon tarts is going to definitely be one of the items. So I don't know. I might sign up for that one too.
I mean, I am now following Molly on Instagram and just am charmed out of my pants.
She is super charming. She really needs to I don't know. She needs a YouTube channel is what I'm saying.
I would watch pastry puff ASMR of just
right?
Sounds of the cream being put in. Okay, sorry. Now I sound really wild here. I think that is so cool, Dory. I love that you did that. I think that is just a really what a great distraction from everything that's going on.
Yes.
Two, you learn something new. You supported a person working at another. It's cool.
It was very cool. I feel like I actually learned a lot. And I don't know if I ever leave the country again. Maybe I'll do her baking class in Versailles.
I am listening to an Italian podcast of these two American husbands who have a villa in Italy. So I feel we should just do a pandemic, international pandemic content.
Ooh,
episode. Oh
yeah. I love that.
Cause that's my big plan is once this is over to go to these guys' villa.
Yeah. And then we can also visit the villa, the castle of the people who wrote in to hear for you.
Yes.
people, if anyone didn't hear this, there's a couple that owns this castle in Tuscany where they usually host weddings that have all been canceled now, of course, but it looks amazing.
Yeah. If you want to go on a Forever 35 retreat, let's do that. Everybody. Okay. Big plans for after this trying time.
Big plans.
Yep.
Oh, all right. Well, should we take a little break? And then when we come back, we'll be talking to Zan Romanoff, the author of wonderful YA books and just an all-around great human.
Yeah, I have gushed about Zan's books on this podcast, I'm pretty sure. So very excited to talk to them.
Same. All right.
We'll be back.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I think it's safe to say that we have suffered through bras. We've been uncomfortable in them. We've devoted whole episodes to finding good ones. But I'm here to say enough is enough. Enough. Enough.
I mean, drawn the line. Dory, have I ever told you what I did in college when I needed a bra to wear with a fancy dress?
What?
I cut the top of pantyhose and then I duct taped that to my chest.
Oh. Sounds uncomfortable.
Because I didn't have honey love when I was in college.
No. Well, we are here to say no more being uncomfortable. With Honey Love's bras, you will wonder why it took so long to make something so comfortable and so supportive. There's no underwire, but through some kind of wonderful magic, they managed to not sacrifice lift. All while making it in a fabric that's so comfortable, you barely know it's there. Especially the crossover bra. I wear one of these almost every day. I'm wearing one right now because it's so comfortable and it easily fits into my life. But if you like a breathable and versatile legging, Honeylove has you covered on that front too. Plus, they have tanks, shapewear, and their V-bra that has molded cups still without the underwire to keep you from getting that dreaded uniboob effect other more relaxed bras tend to give you. So treat yourself to the best bras and shapewear on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/forever. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off, honeylove.com/forever. After your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them and please support our show and tell them we send you. Treat yourself to Honeylove because you deserve it.
You know, one thing I think is really kind of interesting about skin, my skin, but all skin, is that like what it needs now in my 40s is not what I needed in my 30s.
Totally.
Definitely not what I needed in my 20s.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But like, how are you supposed to know what your skin needs?
It's hard. It's hard to know.
Especially when there's just like so many products out there. The overwhelm is real. It's a struggle to even know how to get the results you want, what products to start with. This is why we're super excited to partner with Apostrophe. Apostrophe is a prescription skincare company that offers science-backed medications that are clinically proven to help. I have used Apostrophe. I love it. They will pair you with a board-certified dermatologist who literally creates a personalized treatment plan for your skin. I have done this a few times now. It is so easy to do their online consultation. You upload photos. And like within a few weeks, I had done the consultation and received my treatment plan and my product.
Amazing.
And that is how I became a tretinoin gal. I love the tretinoin that they sent me. I love their sunscreen. Both products have been amazing on my skin. And you, Forever 35 listeners, can get a special deal from Apostrophe. You can get your first visit for only $5. That's at apostrophe.com/forever35 when you use our code forever35. Now that is a savings of $15. I like that. This code is only available to Forever 35 listeners. So to get started, just go to apostrophe.com/forever35 and click get started. And then use our code Forever 35 at sign up and you will get your first visit for only $5. Thank you, Apostrophe, for sponsoring this episode.
Our guest today is Zan Romanoff. Welcome, Zan.
Thank you. This is a thrill. I am a longtime listener of Forever 35, so I'm very excited. Aww.
Well, we're going to read your bio and then we are going to get into it. So Zan is the author of the novels A Song to Take the World Apart, Grace and the Fever, and Look, which came out from Dial Books for Young Readers on March 31st. Zan is a full-time freelance writer. Her essays and journalism have appeared in BuzzFeed, The Cut, GQ, The Los Angeles Times, and The Washington Post, among other outlets, and she lives and writes in LA.
That's it. That's me.
Zan. Yes, that is you. We have so much to talk about. You are what I would describe as one of the premier chroniclers of adolescent girls in fiction.
I don't know about premiere, but I am I am an avid chronicler of adolescent girls in fiction. That is definitely something I spend a lot of my time doing.
So how are you so good at writing about teens?
I mean, I hope that I'm good at writing about teens. And I think sadly part of the answer to that might be that in my heart, I am still a teenage girl. You know, I think, when I started writing fiction seriously, I was in my sort of like mid-20s. And I just felt like I didn't understand anything else well enough to write about it. You know, I was like, okay, I was a teenager. I survived that experience. I, you know, have some thoughts about it. Like, maybe I can kind of like process this and do something with it. And I feel like, you know, it's such a formative time. Like, I'm still just kind of like working out what all went on. And it's interesting. This is something I talk to people a lot about, is that my books, or especially my Grace and the Fever and Look, are a lot about technology. And it's like, oh, you know, how do you think about social media, which didn't exist when I was a teen? Like, you know.
Yeah.
But I feel like it, there's certain parts of the adolescent experience that are kind of eternal, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I think what I'm always doing is like trying to look at what I remember and what still feels urgent to me from those years of my life and trying to find something to tie it into that's happening now. You know, and hopefully that way creating something that will resonate both with, you know, people who are currently teenagers and people who were formerly teenagers, which is to say everyone.
Right.
Zan, this is kind of a convoluted question, but
great.
Stick with me here. Okay. Do you remember what you did, if anything, as a teenager for self-care practices? And have those stayed consistent now that you're an adult?
You know, it's funny. I actually do have like one of the major self-care practices of my life is that I started doing yoga when I was 16. It was offered as PE at the fancy private school that I went to, very Los Angeles. And, I was not an athletic kid. So I was like, amazing. This sounds very low impact. But I fell in love with it and like it changed my life. It changed my relationship to my body, changed like the way that I understood myself as a person. So I started doing yoga seriously, you know, regularly when I was 16, and I did a class this morning, live stream from my yoga studio, because that's where we're at right now. So that's been something that's been really amazing and really consistent for me. But I would say definitely I have learned a ton about self-care in the interim. You know, I was not great at taking care of myself when I was a teenager, like so many of us, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know why. I'm not sure we've talked about this much on the show. And just thinking about your books specifically about these teenagers, it just led me to wonder, like, what are the practices that we put into place when we're younger, and do they linger or do we just abandon them? I think especially because Grace and the Fever is about fandom as a teen, but like I find fandom very self-care-ish as an adult as well. So,
Yeah. No, that's true. I mean, I think like it's interesting, yeah, because I certainly see the seeds of like my life now in my life as an adolescent. Yeah, that I was like, you know, very interested in fandom. And now, you know, I'm writing fan fiction, and like now I write novels and I write nonfiction about celebrities. So like, there you go. You know, the yoga thing, but there was something else that I was just thinking about. Oh, I know. Like, you know, reading, you know, is still like such a huge thing for me. All these things that I sort of was gathering, I feel like, when I was a teenager, but I didn't understand how to put them together yet. And I think in part it's because I didn't have the framework of self-care, which I know, like, you know, as you guys have discussed, has become sort of a, you know, people have taken issue with the term and whatever, but like, I wish that when I was a teenager, someone had said to me, like, you need to spend time figuring out how to take care of yourself. That is actually not a given, and it's hard. Mm-hmm. And like, it will make your life a lot better if you can work that out. So I think the biggest change for me probably was going to therapy as an adult, and starting to understand, like, you know, I have a lovely brain, but it's a little tricky to manage. And, you know, unless I started consciously taking care of myself, I was going to spend a lot more of my life unhappy than I wanted to.
You've written a lot about your mental health struggles, and I'm wondering, first of all, how you kind of came to find the right meds for you, because I feel like you've written about how that was a struggle for you. And then I'm also wondering, like, how is it going in isolation?
Yeah, man. I'm all right. I will say I have two roommates, and they can probably hear me recording this. And I am totally grateful for their existence. I mean, they're good dudes, but also, like, just generally having other creatures in the house is like so important for me. I would be losing my mind otherwise. So it's interesting. It's funny, like, because it's true that I've written a lot about mental health, and I both think it's really important to talk about, and I also sometimes feel bad because I'm like, you know, I'm like a white girl with an anxiety disorder. It's not like, it shouldn't be boundary breaking for me to talk about this. You know, because in many ways I'm super lucky. But, and particularly I would say lucky that, my parents were very open with me about, like, you know, going to therapy is fine. Like, needing help is okay. When I was a kid, I did a little bit of therapy when I was younger. None of it ever really stuck. I just like wasn't ready for it yet. Like I didn't want it, so it didn't take. And then in my early 20s, when I was 22, I graduated from college into the 2009 recession and had just gotten my heart destroyed and like was super depressed. And that was the first time that I on my own was like, I want to go to therapy. I don't feel well. I'm tired of feeling this shitty. And so I did that and then moved and stopped and whatever. And then, I guess 5 years ago now, was in a place, just whatever, you know, life kind of piled up on me and my anxiety got really unmanageable. So I went back to therapy, and that was when I started thinking seriously about medication, which is something I had a conversation I'd had with my first therapist. She was sort of like, I really think you do better on meds. And I was like, I'm tough. I'm too tough for that nonsense. And the second therapist was like, I really think you'll do better on meds. And I was like, I was sort of like, I'm too tough. I don't need it. I don't want to find out what happens. You know, what if? And then it just got to a point where I was unmanageably ill. I like basically couldn't leave the house because I was having panic attacks all the time. Mm-hmm. And I would, but you know, that was my own stubbornness. Like I had all the resources being offered to me. And so that was the point at which I was like, okay, fine. And I actually, I got lucky again that they, my therapist put me on Lexapro. And that took pretty easily. And has had pretty minimal side effects and, you know, has just been like a miracle drug for me personally. Like this is something I think about a lot. And I think Dory, you and I have talked about this, that like, there's this sort of cultural conversation around medication as if it's like numbing and it's a choice, taking it as a choice not to feel anything. And like, I wake up literally every day. Like I've been taking these meds for Jesus Christ, 4 years now. Every single day I wake up and I like take my, you know, little pill and I'm like, man, I love this. I want to feel better. And like, I'm choosing to feel better today. Like that rules.
It's such an interesting statement because I take Prozac and I think I've maybe taken it for like 2 years now. And I had the same thought, that same kind of messaging of like, oh, it's going to numb who I am. And instead I feel like it opened up parts of myself that I wasn't able to access, if that makes any sense.
No, totally. It's been
overwhelmingly positive. And I'm glad you mentioned that because I think it can be numbing for some people, but certainly not everyone. And I think, you know, it's important to share a different perspective.
I just you know, there's all kinds of different drugs, and they affect different people differently. But for me, it was like, I mean, I couldn't leave the house. Like I was, you know, just crying and shaking like all the time. Like, I was feeling way too much and now I feel things. And I'm not afraid to do things. And that's just, you know, it's the best thing.
I loved Grace and the Fever so much that I sent you a cold email to talk about, how much I liked it, which I do not do very often, and you were very kind in receiving it. So
I was thrilled. Thank you for that.
Dory had been the one to recommend it. She's like,
I was just going
to
say,
you need to read this.
I think I need to take credit for this. I basically pressed the book into her hands and was like, this book was basically written for you. So please read it.
And then I read it and then I was like, oh my God, I got to email this writer. But you know, it really meant a lot to me because it was about a fandom frequented predominantly by young women. And I would love to know your thoughts on the way that fandoms populated by girls specifically and women are belittled in our culture. And if you see any change in that or any way forward in that, because that is one of the most frustrating things that I experience personally is the way female fans are treated.
Yeah, it's so frustrating. And speaking of God, me being a teenager, like, you know, I definitely, when I was a teenager, was one of those girls who was like, I'm not like other girls. Other girls like yell and scream and they're so into boys. And like, I'm too smart for that. And it makes me so sad now. I'm like, man, I wasted so much time trying to be cool, which never worked. Wasn't gonna work. I'm not cool. Like, it's great. I have a lot more fun this way. I think the way that we talk about especially young female fans is as if they're hysterical and like possessed, which is just insulting. And you know, this is a comparison that gets made all the time, but it's interesting. So I a couple of years ago like had a childhood interest in baseball and I revived it a couple of years ago. And so now like I'm a sports fan, which I've never been before in my life. And it's super fascinating to me that like when I have conversations at parties now and I'll be talking about like one of my favorite Dodgers and like, you know, reciting baseball stats and talking about, you know, oh, he did this or whatever, like both men and women, but specifically men are like so excited. They're like, oh my God, I love talking baseball with you. Like, this is so wonderful. You know so much. And I'm like, man, if I told you the exact same, like, you know, number of things about Harry Styles, the response would have been, wow, you're like really into that. weird. And it's just, it's so frustrating, man. For so many reasons, I hate whenever anyone shits on anyone else's enthusiasm. Like, that's just, the world is so hard. If someone's found something they love, like, what is wrong with you? And then especially the way that we silence young women's enthusiasm and also young women's desire. I think that's been such a big revelation for me, is like, this kind of urge to pathologize fangirls and be like, oh, well, they only, you know, are into boy bands because they represent this specific form of masculinity. And, you know, they're being duped by this commercial. Da-da-da. It's like, first of all, these girls are 100 million times smarter and more thoughtful about what they're interested in than you, like from 30,000 feet, are probably able to observe. But also, like, they just want stuff, you know, like they see hot guys and they're like, yeah, I want that. Like, that's not, you don't need to pathologize it. You don't need to explain it. Girls just want things the same way everyone else wants things. But I will say, all of that, you know, sort of ranting aside, like, I do think it's getting better. You know, fangirls are rising to places of prominence in the professional world. And like, it kind of sucks that like people have to be able to do this professionally to get taken seriously. You know, it's okay to just have a hobby. But on the other hand, like, you know, I am one author, but I know tons more who talk very openly about being like, yeah, writing fan fiction taught me how to write and like helped me, you know, become a published novelist. You know, I mean, Halsey, right? Like, there's like videos of Halsey covering Taylor Swift when she was younger. You know, like, I think there's just more room in the conversation for women in general. And part of that conversation is being, the space is being made around fandom, which I'm really excited about. So I'm very hopeful. And I think I see younger girls being much more open with that kind of thing than I was. Because they're more aware of it. You know, like, again, I just didn't have, there's so much language I didn't have around desire and feminism and, you know, all these things that I see them being given these tools to express themselves and to understand, you know, why they're being silenced. So I'm hopeful, I think. I am hopeful. I have to be.
Yeah. I mean, they, like, even just having Tumblr as a teen, I think would have been so meaningful to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I had LiveJournal, which was very different.
Yes.
And, yes.
Well, I want to talk about your new book, Look, which at its center has a queer romance. And I'd love to know kind of why you chose to have a queer romance be the center of your new book and what that means for you.
Yeah, totally. So the thing I should say straight off is that I am straight, or I, you know, so far in my life have identified that way. And so it was a real decision. And it came in part actually from my first two books, both of which have subplots, like queer subplots. And particularly in Grace and the Fever, the main character is sort of obsessed with a conspiracy theory that two members of her favorite boy band are dating each other. Sorry. And, so I felt like, just sort of looking at those two books, I was like, okay, you know, if I'm going to write a third book, I want to write something kind of new and different. I want to challenge myself. You know, here's clearly a subject that I'm really interested in, but have been kind of pushing off to the sidelines. So how can I like bring that to the forefront? You know, can I make that the focus of a book? So there was that aspect to it. You know, certainly I have a lot of queer female friends, and particularly bisexual female friends. And I talked to them a lot about the lack of representation of queer girls and bi girls in literature of all kinds, but especially YA literature. And so, I mean, yeah, coming into it, it was kind of like, I was like, oh, this is an interesting craft challenge. You know, like, can I push myself creatively? And then, of course, you know, you get to the point where you're like, oh, other human beings are going to read this book and I need to be responsible to them. Like, I would not want any of those, you know, friends who, you know, have shared so much of their lives with me. Like, I don't want them to feel misrepresented. I don't want them to feel like I didn't listen to them. You know, I don't want them to feel like I was sort of like, oh, well, I have queer friends, so like, I know everything about the bisexual experience. So, you know, there was then this real emotional challenge and writerly challenge also of figuring out kind of how best to deal with that. So I had a bunch of those friends read the book. My publisher actually paid a couple of them like to do it professionally, which I really love because they were like ending, you know, they're lending me their expertise.
Yeah.
And then they didn't have the budget for as many as I wanted. So some friends did it as a favor and I took them for drinks. Well, because I was like, I have all these resources. Like, why not get multiple opinions, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, and they gave me really good notes. There was, you know, there was definitely stuff in there that I just like had, you know, just wouldn't have thought of or had slightly misunderstood or, you know, had said something in a way that they were like, I wouldn't say it that way. So, you know, it was I don't know. I had a great experience with it so far. you know, there's always the possibility that someone's going to read it and be like, wow, you messed up. And that would suck. And I hope it doesn't happen. But, you know, you can't, like, you just simply cannot please everyone. So the thing for me was kind of like the people in my life who I'm like really responsible to, you know, my friends, like I owe them something. Mm-hmm. I owe it to them to get this right. And I was like, as long as they're okay with it, like, that's the thing that matters most to me.
Yeah. And it seems like you went about it in such a thoughtful way. And, you know, you see other authors who are writing about communities that they're not a part of, just sort of thinking, having this privileged point of view that they know, they kind of are omniscient and know everything they need to know about these communities before they write about them. And I really like that you were like, I need to know what I don't know, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I just think, you know, I mean, I feel like any good writer wants to be, I mean, getting edited sucks, but it's also necessary, you know, like I've just seen so much, like so often I turn in a draft that I'm like, that was really good. And then my editor comes back to me and we work on it. And I'm like, yep, this is way better now. You just need someone else, you know, for anything you write to look at the draft. And then even, you know, beyond that, like if you're, you know, you're writing about something you haven't experienced and people who have experienced it are going to read the book, like, it's just embarrassing. Like, why would you not try to get that right?
Totally.
But yeah, I also, you know, will say that as someone who's read a lot of books in which I felt wildly misrepresented, you know, as a demographic, I was like, I don't want to do that to anyone else. Mm.
I don't want to switch gears in like a wild way here, but you have written about the Kardashians quite a bit. I would say you're very, very knowledgeable in the world of of Dash.
Oh God. I am a Kardashian expert. I think it is fair to say this about myself. Yeah. And I mean, go ahead.
No. I mean, I think they're fascinating because one, they have lasted, I think, longer than any of us gave them credit like for their potential. And two, something about consuming the Kardashians is like it's like a national way of self-soothing in a lot of ways. Mm. Slash, like Dory and I recently discussed how we both want to learn how to contour our faces. So like their influence and beauty and culture is, I mean, it's possibly appropriated, you know, but I'm curious kind of what you think of their reign and the way we participate in Kardashian culture.
Yeah. I mean, so first of all, I will say I don't think of it as being such a gear change because, you know, a lot of the inspiration for Look came from the time that I spent watching Kylie Jenner on Snapchat, right? And being like, man, it must be crazy to be like a young woman who's being told, you know, sort of ambiently by the culture all the time, like, the best, most exciting thing you can do is A, be hot, and B, take pictures of your hot body.
Yes, wait, because not to interrupt you, but can you give us a brief synopsis of what Look is about so our listeners
are aware? Yes, 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 I can do it. I have my elevator pitch ready to go. So Look is about a girl named Lulu, who is sort of low-key, like locally famous, I would say, on an app called Flash. In part because she's just like a cute, you know, LA private school girl, but in part because she's dating the son of a rock star. But so when she accidentally posts a video of herself cheating on that boyfriend with a girl to her Flash, she both ruins the relationship and also accidentally outs herself as being bisexual, which she wasn't previously out. And so this, you know, beautiful sort of appealing life that she has been putting out there for everyone to see and everyone's been kind of eating up with a spoon crumbles around her. And she's sort of wondering, okay, you know, what parts of that were good for me? And do I want to, you know, try and get back again? And what parts of that life maybe actually weren't so great? And can I leave behind and figure out a new way? So it's very much about social media and about, you know, self-promotion, and but about the interior experience, right? Of like being a conscious human being who, you know, is, and especially being really young and being told kind of like, here's the best way to live your life. Here's, you know, what everyone wants and you can act like you have it. You know, and getting to a place where you're like, I think those people might be wrong. the Kardashians are so interesting to me. I mean, that really, like, that happened kind of by accident. I was following them all on Snapchat and doing kind of what I did not know then was very preliminary novel research. And I, you know, wrote a piece about it. I wrote, Kylie Jenner was opening the first like Kylie Cosmetics pop-up at a mall in LA. And I was like, well, I want to go. So I got one of my editors to pay me to go write about it. That was fun. And then another editor reached out to me and was like, well, I want you to write about the Kardashians and plastic surgery. I was like, okay, that seems interesting. And I did that. And then another editor was like, I want you to write about their beauty empire. And the thing that's been so fascinating to me about this, I got to say, is that I feel like the conversation around them is just consistent disdain, right? Almost everyone's like, ugh, they're dumb. You know, ugh, they're vapid. Ugh, you know, materialistic. And don't get me wrong, I disagree with a lot of the things they do. I don't think that they're heroes or feminist icons. But I did not intend to become a Kardashian expert, and I just kept getting pulled back into it because there was this hunger, I think, to like have someone take them a little bit seriously. You know, they're so omnipresent in the culture, and I think the conversation around them tends to sort of be reduced to either like hashtag girl boss, yes, or like they're dumb and I hate them. And you know, there's a real desire, I think, for something in between, which is like, why is this so fascinating? Why? I mean, how in God's name have these women been that famous for this long? It's insane. Like, they really, I mean, they're a dynasty. They're legitimately an American dynasty at this point. My favorite thing as a writer is to try and like, is to look at the things that are kind of only designed to make you feel something, right? And in the case of the Kardashians, it's like desire for their bodies, desire for their houses, sort of like lulled comfort at the monochrome, like predictable, you know, soap drama of it all, and be like, okay, this is supposed to like sort of short circuit and just like provide an emotional response, but like, how is that working? You know, what is it about this thing that works so well? And I have a lot of hypotheses, but no answers, I should say.
I wanted to ask you about your boxing gym.
This is so sad to me. Like, when I first emailed you guys about being on the podcast, I was like, I know you've had a lot of YA writers and like, we could talk about boxing. And now I haven't boxed in several months and may never again.
Oh gosh.
No, I'm kidding. I will box again. There's no reason. Yeah.
Before you had to stop boxing, tell us about your boxing gym and how it's changed you.
Yeah, man. So I think listeners perhaps can gather from like all the things I've said so far that I am a very unlikely person to end up in a boxing gym. You know, my interests are like books and celebrities and sitting still and reading. But Maureen Gu, a friend of Forever 35.
Indeed.
Yeah. Like 4 years ago, I guess 4 years ago, because it was right after the election, was like, I want to put together a self-defense class for some women that we know, and we'll do it at this boxing gym, because she knows the guy who runs it. And we were like, yeah. Like, I didn't know her that well at that point. I was kind of like, okay, like, good to do self-defense, good to like make a professional connection. And then we just all fell in love with it. Like, boxing is one of the most fun things I've ever done in my life. It's very hard, first of all, because you have to coordinate your whole body. Like, your foot has to move at the same time as your hip, as your like chest, as your arm. So you just have to concentrate really hard while you're doing it. But it's also so unlike any other physical activity I'd ever done, you know, which like in yoga is a lot about like concentration and alignment and gentleness, which I love and is so important. But it was just like revelatory to have someone be like, just hit the bag as hard as you can for 3 minutes and then like take a break and then do it again. And then a couple of years ago, I started sparring, which is when you stop, I mean, instead of hitting bags, you hit an actual person. And it's just, it's been like a wild experience. So many things that I never in 100 million years thought that I would end up doing, but it's really asked me, I think, to be in touch with my own competitiveness, which is something that I've been trying to tamp down since I was a small girl, and aggressiveness and sort of like, what does it mean to be aggressive? What does it mean to be violent? You know, cause you know, like the women I spar with, I know them, I love them, I respect them. Like, I do not want to hurt them. But also, I don't want to let them. But I don't, you know, but I want to win. and I guess there's a certain, like, this is something I was trying to write about sort of before everything went to shit, and maybe will eventually, but is the things you learn about consent in a boxing ring. Because to a certain extent, we say to each other, like, listen, you know, neither of us wants to have a broken bone. We don't want a concussion. You know, we don't want any lasting damage. But, like, you're allowed to hit me.
Yeah.
You're allowed to hit me kind of hard.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's real. That's real trust to give someone. And it's real trust to have someone give you, to be like, okay, I trust that, like, you're going to hit me and you're not going to. But you're not going to hit me too hard. You know, you're going to hit me, but you're not going to sucker punch me. You're not going to take advantage of me. And like, that is just such an intense experience. And I feel like I'm still sorting through like what I've learned from it and what I want to take from it. But it's wild. And I think, I don't know. I feel like I, like many women, spent a lot of my early life pretending I didn't have a body, just being like, ugh, I can't, it's too stressful, I can't think about it. And then at a certain point, I was like, okay, I have a body, but I got to keep it under control. You know, I got to do all this exercise and I got to like eat these certain things. And now that I'm a little bit older, and I think also definitely now that I'm more mentally stable, I'm like, okay, like, what can I explore with my body? You know, what kinds of, can I test some limits now? Like, yeah, Kate, when you're talking about like being more open to the world, I'm like, okay, like I can try this thing that's really hard and kind of scary and not always comfortable, because I trust that I can sort of come to the edge of my limits and be like, okay, that's a limit. I'm going to come back now.
Mm. Test your limits. I love that.
Yeah. I mean, it's not for everyone, for sure. We've had some of the women have started sparring and been like, you know what? Not for me. I don't like getting hit. I don't like hitting people and I'm not going to do it. And I totally respect that. You know, it's for sure not for everyone. But for me, it's been, I'm like, man, there's so much stuff in here that I didn't know was here.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Trying to lure you guys to the gym. Is it working?
People have tried. I'm terrified. I don't know if it's for me, but I do understand the experience and this has kind of hit me recently, of using my body in a physical way for an intention that is not weight loss. Like I feel like I've only ever pushed my body in most situations because I was trying to fit it into some sort of shape. And recently I've been exercising really intensely, but it's more been like fully for just my well-being and making like physical improvement, like learning how to get stronger. And it's been so weird to do it, not trying to whittle myself down. I don't know how else to describe it. I'm still trying to figure it out, but it's been really interesting. And I kind of hear, like, I can relate to a lot of what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, yeah, just like focusing on your body's function, A, how it feels, and B, how it functions instead of how it looks. Like,
yeah,
continues to be a revelation to me every time. Like, you know, like I started lifting, like, you know, like doing like serious barbell lifting a couple of months ago. And it was wild to be like, okay, I'm like intentionally going to put on a good amount of muscle, you know, I'm going to get bigger. But, you know, but I felt so good doing it. And like, yeah, I miss it. I had like morning lifting with some girlfriends and we would like, you know, do like a little 7 a.m. gossip and it was great.
And pump some iron and yeah.
Pump some iron.
I hope you get it back.
Oh, we will. I mean, you know, the world is, it's changing, but I have to believe that eventually I'll be able to pump iron again.
This feels like a good spot to end on. Dory, do you have any other questions or do you think we should wrap it up?
I think we're good. I mean, I could talk, Zan, I could talk to you for hours.
I know. But that's how I feel.
Yeah. I hope all this is over, we can hang out IRL again.
Yes. Oh my God. That's the true dream.
Yeah.
I want to see your faces. I want to see Henry's little face.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Yeah. I have. Yeah. Can't wait for human contact. But in the meantime, this has been wonderful.
Well, Zan, where can people find you? And oh, please plug your newsletter, by the way.
Oh, yes. Oh, so good.
thank you. So I am at Xanopticon on Twitter and on Instagram. And I have a website, zanromanoff.com, ZANROMANOFF as in Frank. And I also have a tiny letter, tinyletter.com/Xanopticon, that I send out probably every other week. And it's usually has links to any writing that I've been doing or now that I'm doing book publicity, you know, interviews. But I also try and write like a little something to accompany it. Like I said, I grew up on LiveJournal and did have a Tumblr for a while. So it's sort of where I do my blogging now, just whatever's going on with me.
Yeah, it's delightful.
Thank you. I enjoy doing it. It's good for me to sit down and be like, what do I feel like? What is going on?
Well, thank you so much, Zan. And I just want to encourage our listeners to buy your new book, your older books, buy all of Zan's books.
Please do.
Thank you.
It shouldn't be so hard or expensive to find furniture that exudes elegance, sophistication, and a touch of luxury. And we're happy to say that today's sponsor, Article, makes getting quality furniture as easy as checking the pieces out online. Thanks to their online-only model, they have some really great manageable prices. Article believes in delightful design for every home, so you can get to creating a space that truly reflects your personal style. I now have a space that is quite outfitted in Article. And I have to tell you how not just like seamless, but truly enjoyable the ordering and shipping process was. It was extremely fast. It's affordable, very convenient because I got to pick the delivery time and they sent me updates every step of the way. It was like they knew that I was an obsessive checker on shipping. And they were like, we see you, we honor you, and we're going to support that journey for you. As Dory knows, I have a beautiful bench from Article right when you enter my home. Gorgeous planters. And then my favorite, my kind of like surprise favorite piece from Article are the blankets I have gotten for my sofa that my family all hogs. including my dogs. My dogs love these blankets so they're like throws on our couch. The dogs try to monopolize them.
Dogs are such blanket hogs.
They know a soft blanket when they see one, I gotta say. So their endorsement, honestly, their endorsement says more than mine ever could. That's how soft these blankets are. Article has all kind of curated furniture from mid-century modern or coastal to industrial, Scandi, boho. So no matter what style you're leaning toward, they have got something for you. I mean, you could really do like every room in your house in a different kind of style if you wanted to. And with Article's team of designers, no matter what piece or how many, you're sure to find the perfect balance between style, quality, and price. Article is offering Forever 35 listeners $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. To claim it, visit article.com/forever, and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout. That's article.com/forever for $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. All right. Dory.
Yes, Kate.
Should we take that highway to the intention zone?
Yep.
Get on that highway?
How has no one written us that jingle yet?
I mean, because people are busy. We're in a pandemic. I don't blame anybody.
Whatever.
Listen, when Dory wants a jingle, Dory gets a jingle.
So, Kate, you know, last week I was talking about how I was getting a large shelving unit for my office delivered.
Oh, yes.
From IKEA. And my intention was to put it together and to put stuff away in it so my office finally feels usable. So it got delivered on Tuesday. It sat in our driveway for like 4 or 5 days. And then on Saturday or Friday, I brought in a couple of the boxes and opened them, and because Matt was going to put it together. And then he was like, oh God, I better work on it. So he put it together on Saturday. It took him 6 hours, but it's done. It looks amazing. Like, it is exactly what I wanted, which I feel like never happens, especially with IKEA stuff.
Will you share the exact cabinets that you got? With us?
Yes, I will. It is from the Hovsta line.
It looks beautiful in the picture that you sent to me.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it kind of mimics like what a built-in would look like, but it's not a built-in. And it's modular, so you can sort of, you can like design the arrangement that you want. So I am really into it. I've already put a bunch of books away in it. There's a cabinet. I've put stuff in the cabinet. So things are happening in my office.
That's exciting, Dory. That must feel good to get settled in.
It feels really good. And then my intention this week is to just make the cream puffs that I learned about in the online baking class.
I want cream puffs so badly after discussing this. All I can think about is a cream puff. You've got to make these.
Should I do a porch drop-off for you?
Oh, that was not what I was getting at, but I will happily take any rejected cream puffs. But I think this is a really fun, I'm so glad you had such a positive experience in the class, and this just feels like a nice way to kind of like learn something new.
Yeah.
And cook and make something delicious.
Yeah.
This sounds great.
Thank you. What about you?
Well, I have a question for you. Am I allowed to redo an intention?
Sure.
Because I don't think that before. What?
We make the rules.
Oh, that's true. I guess this is our podcast. whose permission am I asking for? I guess my own. Okay, I did none of my intentions last week, and I set two for myself. And one, I wanted to take class with my favorite yoga teacher in New York City, and the other was that I was going to schedule therapy. Well, I failed on both fronts. One, I couldn't make yoga work with my schedule. It's just too hard to do anything during the day because I'm kind of, if I'm not working, I'm helping my kids with school, or like we're walking the dog, or just we're doing something. So unfortunately, there's no way for me to do any sort of like live class during the day. So, you know, it happens. The second one, though, I did not schedule therapy. So that's my re-intention for this week, is that I really want to schedule a therapy session with my therapist. I think it would be beneficial for me.
Yeah.
I'm sure my therapist misses me so much during this time. And, you know, really, I'm doing it for them. They want to see me. I kid. But I want to see my therapist. So I got to schedule therapy. That's my double intention.
great. I'm into this for you.
Well, thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Well, it's been a fun one.
It truly has. We will talk to you all soon, and we got to do our little credits. Forever 35 is hosted and produced by me, Doris Freer, and Kate Spencer, and produced and edited by Sammy Junio, and Sam Reed is our project manager.
And don't forget our many sign-offs. Butt masks. Butt masks forever.
No, butt masks never. 35 forever. Bye.
Bye.
Those are the two that we're working with right now.
Yeah, let us know how that went.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.